Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
I am Velocity Child, and every Friday at the stroke of midnight, ride the broomstick with Fallen Woman. A weekly psychic fusion of forward thoughts, far-out ideas, magical foray, and spellbinding song. Stirring up the cauldron at Radio Free Brooklyn.
Hey, Velocity Child here, and you are listening to Fallen Woman on Radio Free Brooklyn, and I have the distinct honor of sharing time and stories with the Richard Pryor Jr., who is on the verge of sharing an excerpt of his new book, In a Prior Life, with you right now.
Playdates and pageants and rape. Oh my.
Oh gosh.
Every weekend when I was 7, 8, and 9 years old, my mother and her brothers and sisters would get together in one of their basements to chill out from the week, play cards, gossip, listen to music, and drink. My uncles and aunts all had kids, lots of kids growing up. My cousins were my playmates. During the week, some of the grown-ups would hit up the Goodwill shops and the Salvation Army and buy Miss America type costumes for the girls. On the weekends, we staged pageants. The girls would wear the costumes when they paraded down the basement runway, strutting their stuff. For the talent portion of the pageant, the girls performed their specialty, making sing a song, tell a story of a poem, or do magic tricks. And the pageants were completed, everybody would vote to select the girl who would be crowned Miss Peoria.
Oh.
We made actual tickets, which we sold to the grown-ups, tickets we dotted lines, so that when the customer was admitted to our theater, their ticket stub was torn in half along the dotted line. Often after funeral, we kids would reenact the ceremony. First, we chose up to see who would get to play the deceased. In all modesty, I was a terrific corpse. We also put on plays. I wrote a play we staged called The Church of the Children. That was in Aunt Loretta's basement, which was the largest basement in the family. We moved furniture around to create a set that was like inside a church. I don't exactly remember the play's storyline or any of the dialogue, but I do remember one of the girl cousins was dressed like this old lady from our church who had ran a rave and raised one hand and swayed back and forth. My cousin imitated her perfectly. Another play I wrote that we did was called Cindy, the Tale of the Black Cinderella. A third play I think was simply called The Poor Family. It was about a happy family who happened to be very poor. On a warm day, my cousins and I played Red Light, Green Light, Dynamite Blue. Every year we gathered around the TV set to watch The Wizard of Oz on broadcast. Afterward, we staged our own version. It was great fun, even though I never got to play Dorothy, who was always played by Cousin Tara because she had braids. I was the cowardly lion all the time. Toward the end of the typical weekend play day, my cousin and I would have a serious discussion about who was going to be the one to ask if I could spend the night together. I'm sure the adults knew the request was going to come at some point, and I'm sure they'd already decided whether or not they'd be an overnight. If so, where and when and with whom. But some of those sleepover nights with two of my older male cousins were nights I was molested. Actually molested, in a way too clinical a verb. One cousin would hold me down on the bed with my head pressed into a pillow to muffle my screams, while the other cousin got on top of me and fucked me up the ass. Then they switched. Oh God, it hurt like hell. Why didn't I tell Mom? Mainly embarrassment. Also fear. Fear of those cousins retaliating, and, absurd as it sounds, fear that snitching would end play dates. No more pageants and plays.
Ugh. dude. I don't have anything profound to follow that up with. That is heavy shit. And I empathize. Not like that, though. My very different story. You're a survivor of many sorts.
Yeah, I've got to find the other thing. There's another thing here about my grandfather, an issue I went through with my grandfather.
Really.
Okay. Oh, this here.
Okay.
No, that's not it.
No.
talk amongst yourselves.
And Richard Pryor Jr. is currently hosting a book tour of sorts coming up April, right? Kazuntai.
April 10th.
Kazuntai.
I'm actually doing a book release party on March 1st at the Triad Theater on 72nd in New York City. And my friend Jeannie Soul singing. I'm singing, and my sister Rain is coming up from Baltimore to perform.
What's the start time?
It's 3 p.m. On that day.
At where?
At the, some called the Triad Theater on 72nd Street. So it's, they pretty much, the tickets are free, but you reserve the seats for the seats and everything. And so they're already like at 90 seats already or something like that already.
All right.
So they're expecting a standing room only for that event. And then what we'll do at the time, my manager will speak, and then Ron Brar, who is the co-writer, will speak a few moments. We'll do the singing. And then we'll have a Q&A, and I'll read excerpts from the book.
Will you be singing as well?
Yes, I'm actually going to sing.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I do have another thing I wanted to really read.
Please.
Another
story to share.
Yeah, this is called Digression. And this was I didn't realize how pivotal this was to my life until I was a lot older.
Mark, too.
As far as the things that how I went through. Okay, I know you want to hear about Grandpa Fox killing that guy in the bar. So let's flash forward a few years to when I was 4. After work on the weekends, Grandpa liked to nip or two of the scotch. One evening at the Globestream Tap, a bar across the street from Fox and Granny's apartment, he got into a dispute with another patron, the Downstate Illinois Rivalry, a.k.a. the Route 66 Rivalry, one of the fiercest competitions in sports. On one side, the north side, are the diehard Chicago Cubs fans. Opposing them are those Southern Illini whose proximity to Missouri makes them the St. Louis Cardinals fans. Grandpa Fox from Missouri was firmly in the Cards camp. The bargain got heated. Finally, the Cubs fan unloaded what he figured was the clincher. He unzipped his fly, pulled out his penis, thrust into my grandfather's face, and told Fox to suck his dick. Grandpa calmly knocked back the last drop of scotch in his shot glass, got up from the bar stool, and stormed out. He crossed Globe Street, entered the two-family house where he and Granny lived, walked up the stairs to the second-floor apartment, and tiptoed in. 4-year-old me sat in the living room at a table with a new box of Crayola crayons and coloring book. I looked up when Fox came in. "Hi, Grandpa." He put his finger to his lips. "Shh." Granny was talking on the phone and puffing away on a Viceroy cigarette, her back to us. Fox silently entered the bedroom. Curious about the I stood and followed him. He went straight to the chest of drawers, yanked open a drawer, pushed some socks and underwear aside, and took out a pistol. I ran back into the living room. "Granny!" "Not now, Richie, I'm on the phone." "But Granny! Grandpa! Richard! I'm on long distance." Gun in hand, Fox tore out of the apartment. "Granny, not now." I went to the window and watched Grandpa cross Globe Street and enter the bar. A minute later, I heard the shot. Bam! Fox copped a guilty plea in exchange for a reduced sentence. 2 years in prison due to the fact that he had been provoked and had no prior record. And also, probably because the guy who killed him was white.
So, your grandfather got shot?
No, my mother's father shot a man and killed a man. Because a man, I didn't find out until I was like probably 20 years old, 19, 20 years old, that the guy pulled his dick out and put it in my grandfather's face and told him to suck it.
Your grandfather was white?
No, he wasn't white.
Who was the white guy then?
There was no white guy.
You just said a white guy.
No. I said probably if he was a white guy,
ah,
his sentence would have been longer than
what he got a white.
But actually, my
actually
my mother's
been to show so many times.
Actually,
yeah.
Really, I'm gonna show you a picture of my grandfather. And my mother and all of them were very, very like. There was definitely European blood. This was my grandfather.
Oh, handsome bugger.
But that's, you could tell he's got some white in him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got kind of a Duke Ellington thing going on.
Yeah. There was some cockamamication there.
Yeah. So, wow.
You just don't know what to say to you about it.
Well,
anything.
I do. One shot. That's what struck me.
Yeah.
That's all it took. Just one shot.
And I remember it very well.
Like
it happened yesterday.
Well-aimed shot.
Yeah. Killed the man.
Must have been good with a gun if he just did it in one shot.
I don't know. I think he was determined.
Murder's messy.
He was determined.
Wow. How did you feel about that, having borne witness and trying to stop it?
I think later in life, I didn't realize how it affected me.
Yeah, I was saying,
because
so you
prefaced
the story with it.
I felt the, because I didn't realize I was living with guilt.
I was going to ask about
that. Of not being able to stop something that I really... When you look back at when I got older, I realized that when I got older, there was no way I could stop anything.
No.
So the things happened were going to happen regardless of what I did. But when you're that young, you don't realize the baggage you carry on and hold with you. And you don't realize it's even having an effect on you until you get older.
Yeah.
And then you look back and you're like, oh, that was really bothered me.
Yeah.
And it took me years to realize
that murder's a lot of weight to carry.
Because I blamed myself.
Of course.
Because I couldn't
from a place
alert.
Of good and
I could, yes, I couldn't alert them and I couldn't tell them what was happening.
And no one was paying attention to you. It's a lot like.
But you don't look at that.
You
don't look
South
at that
Park,
part, though.
And they get outraged and they're trying to get the adults' attention. And a lot of episodes in South Park. They're like, hey, and the adults keep talking, and no one's paying attention to these kids that have this crucial information, and they're just yammering on, and the kids are looking at you like, is this really happening? They're
you
not
don't
even,
see it.
They don't want to listen to us.
You just feel that you're the only one, and you're carrying all that burden yourself.
Yeah. It's like a silent witness having to hold a burden of murder.
Yeah.
How old were you?
The book says 4. I think I was closer to... No, my aunt... We did.
Fuck, I was going to estimate 8.
No, we verified with my aunt. I remember she said I was 4 because she was in California at 14 and she's 10 years older than I was. So if she was 14, I was 4.
So basically, most of your life...
has been turmoil and shit.
You've been carrying that weight.
And a lot of other things, yeah. That and molestation, all those things.
What's another anecdote you'd like to... Just off the cuff. You don't have to read
it.
Just spin the yarn organic style if you want to do. If you have a tale to tell that...
Does it have to go in chronological order? Or can it just be anything I can think of?
Yeah.
I fucked Sam Kinison.
Fuck.
For those of you who don't know, Sam Kinison was a comic back in the 80s.
Just throwing it out there.
Yeah, throwing it out there. It's in the book.
Richard Pryor Jr. and Sam
Kinison. Not like it. Yeah.
Got down.
Oh, my God. It shows you. You know what? You know the commercial they used to do remember the commercial they used to do with the Fridays?
I'm assuming you were the top.
You know the commercial years ago they used to do with the fried eggs? Said, "This is your brain on drugs." That was my brain on drugs.
I have so many questions.
Oh, ask him, because I remember when he even asked me that. I remember it was like, "Fuck me," and I was like, "My first question was."
My first question was,
"Do you have any porn?" That was my first.
Get me warmed up.
Yeah.
How long did you guys know each other at that point?
Within a year. Okay. You know, I was working at the comedy store and he was a comic there and all that.
It wasn't like the day you met.
No.
Still crazy.
We had been through drug periods and, you know, doing coke, and I would try to buy coke for the group and all that stuff, and I'd buy my little gram and all that stuff, and they'd be like, "Put it away. That's not going to do anything for us." That's not even a nostril full for us. And that was like stuff that lasts me all night. You know what else he did to me? I was in rehab, and I did my 30 days in the care unit. I was so excited. I was sober 30 days. Mm-hmm. And I got out, and he said, "Welcome out of rehab." And he handed me the fifth of Jack Daniels and an 8-ball.
Fucker.
Yeah.
And so
I made it 30 days.
Yeah.
So then it started all over again because.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And is that what led you? Was that before or after the sex?
Oh, no, that was before. That was the first roundabout.
So after the 30 days, the 8-ball and the 5th of Jack, you are led down this. Sam Kinison path.
Yeah.
Into his bedroom.
Yeah.
And did he express where his desires were?
Well, he said to me. He said to me, I'm not going to say the comic's name, so he said to me, "Me and so and so were talking and we think you're hot." So I'd like to know, would you fuck me? And so it was like a couple moments of like, what'd you just say? Did he just say what I think he said? And, oh my God, he's asked me to fuck him. How in the hell am I going to fuck Sam Kinison?
It's like sticking your dick in a nuclear bomb and you just hope it doesn't go off while it's
well,
in there.
Well, you know, I was fucking him the whole time. I was thinking of Ned Beatty and Deliverance.
No.
So it was,
wee! Did you tell him to squeal like a pig?
No, I should have.
Oh, my God. That would be so good. Did he scream at all like he does on stage? Did on stage.
Not like on stage, but he did make some yelps, you know? You know, I think I might have heard some.
He was audible.
I think I might have heard some give it to me.
Yeah.
Or maybe some like a deeper or, you know.
Wow.
And it definitely wasn't a thing where I said, "I'm in there all the way. I can't go no deeper." But it was
balls deep.
I was given what I could do.
Wow.
And it was quite interesting.
You're a big fella too, man.
Yeah.
That's one hell of a
tidbit. It was big. I mean, he wasn't he wasn't Chris Farley big, but he was a juicy dude.
He was thick.
Mm-hmm.
I've been called thick.
Yeah.
It means when you're not loose or flabby, but you've got meat on you.
But look at you, when you're sexy thick, what the hell does that matter? I've been looking at that booby all night long and be like, I kind of want a taste of that.
I'm actually wearing a bra today.
Oh, my God.
I found a good one for a change.
I talked to one of my sisters, Tammy, who's actually in my book. She called me up. She said, "Oh, my God, me and Elanda, my other sister, went out shopping, and I found out all these years I've been wearing the wrong size bra."
That's true for
She was like two sizes larger So she was like, like a 40 or or something like that.
Yep.
And then she found out she's like a 44 triple F or something like
that. Yeah, these bra makers just assume we all stop at 38D and go
because
no
that's
further.
All you always heard. You always heard 38D.
That's the highest number. They or 38 double D if you that's a lucky find. That's usually what I've had to rely on. That's why I honestly don't wear bras most of the time.
I don't blame me because
you're fucking uncomfortable.
Because you got some things on you.
I do.
They were voluptuous and beautiful, though, by the way.
Turns out this cup is too small on me. But I did get it in a 42 instead of a 38. And it's also made out of this really crazy silicone
type
of fabric.
So you
were
42? So if my sister's a 44.
And this is a 42 double D. And so like my nipples totally popping out of it. But it's doing the rest of the work everywhere else, so it's I don't mind it. It's still incredibly
comfortable. So my sister is huge then.
So I'm probably easily, I'd say, like a 42 triple D. I think I'm a size, this cup size is a little, just one size too small.
Wow.
But I recently found that out. I'm like, oh, fuck, 42.
Wow.
I got to get in on that. If this is how a 42 feels, then maybe I could start wearing bras.
I'm still excited. I just saw your little nipple.
Oh, I know. My nipple's really tiny.
It was so beautiful.
Huge tit, tiny nipples.
It was beautiful.
I tried having pierced nipples once. Didn't take. They were just too small.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
I had them removed before they did anything.
You're right.
Funny.
Wow. So we've switched this subject to a totally wonderful things to talk about.
Tits.
From molestation to tits.
Of course, you're at Velocity's house. That's a natural progression. How is the crooning today? These days, like
the crooning.
What songs are you
up
to?
I haven't.
Focused on the book.
I've been focused on the book, but there's a song I sing in my show that I dedicate to my dad, and I'm singing it actually on March the 3rd at the theater there. I'm singing it to my dad. It's called Nobody Wants You When You're Down and Out. Did I sing that one to you before?
You did, but
that
was
the one?
A long time ago.
Oh, yeah. So that's the one. And it was weird. I did a show in Vegas on February 2nd in Las Vegas. I mean, not Vegas, in Palm Springs. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have music for the thing, so I had to sing it a cappella.
That's how you sang it on my show, and it was beautiful.
And it went really well.
Of course. And isn't that how your father sang it? Wasn't it a cappella?
No, he sang it with music. Okay. Yeah. But it's just incredible to me, like, how I can sing songs without music. It's almost like I hear those notes and everything, and I remember them for some reason. It's really odd because it's not an easy thing to do to sing without music.
It's haunting to hear your voice even when you speak because you definitely inherited his vocal cords.
Yeah.
I'm sure you hear that a lot.
I've heard that. I've heard people say, you sound like him.
You do.
Yeah. But I don't hear it. But only time I've heard it is when he sang and I sang the song, and my manager said, you guys, and his wife, you guys sound just alike.
When I was 8 years old, my dad, biological, gave me a vinyl record. I was eyeballing it at his apartment when I was visiting on the weekend. And I would listen to it and I laughed a lot. And he gave it to me and brought it home. And it was Richard Pryor's vinyl album. I was a 70s child, so
get out of here.
Yeah, and it was
you've never told me this.
That
crazy.
Yeah.
Oh my god, you've never told me that before.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow, Velocity.
Yeah, I was listening to that when I was a kid.
Wow.
A lot.
You were ahead further than I was. I had to sneak and listen to them.
Oh, I played it in the house.
Oh my god. Even though my grandmother and great grandmother would call everybody bitches and hoes and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
Yeah. I always figured my mother was very progressive and open minded and just let me get away with stuff because of that. But really, She just didn't give a shit. But long story short.
Oh, I was going to say that. So she's just
crazy. I was exposed to lots of things very young. Like,
that you shouldn't have been.
I remember taking UC American Gigolo because she couldn't find a babysitter when I was like 7.
Oh, my God. My father.
And to this day, she wants to pretend Richard Gere didn't show his dick in the movie.
He did.
I'm like, fuck you. I remember this. Viscerally remember
he turned sideways.
Dick.
He was sideways and the dick was
and
there.
You Google it, mother. You
That's can... like my dad took me to see The Exorcist.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Because he does a bit about that on the album that I used to listen to.
He did that. And then he also on Saturday Night Live.
I saw that
Saturday
when I was a
Live,
kid, too.
On Saturday Night Live, he did a skit about The Exorcist on Saturday Night Live. And it's, the bed is on my foot because the bed landed, and they were like, "Let the power of Christ compel you. The power of Christ compel. The bed is on my foot. The bed
yes.
is on my."
Was he the priest?
Yeah, he was one.
Yes.
He was the.
I think I remember.
He
this.
Was the practice. He was the. He was learning from the actual head priest.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, little girl, it's okay. Your mama sews socks that smell.
Yeah.
What'd you say about my mama?
Yes. I actually remember this.
Oh my God, that was a great skit.
I loved his stand-up.
I think my father won an Emmy for that episode.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was it like
when they did word association or something like that? Yeah.
Wow.
He was nominated. One of those. I know it was something like that. Yeah.
So we really.
Yeah. That's when
such a dichotomy to be raised with so much laughter and humor, and so much trauma at the same time.
Well, the laughter and the humor really wasn't in the households at all. That was on stage.
All right. Yeah.
When you're, like, in real life, you get the darkness and the truth.
Clowns are very different when they take their makeup
exactly.
off. Yeah.
Yeah. Most comics are introverts.
Yeah, it's very true.
You know? My father was on stage. I remember I auditioned for a film or whatever, playing my father. And I was like, do you want the caricature Richard Pryor, or do you want the real Richard Pryor? And I gave them the real Richard. They said, oh, of course, the real Richard Pryor. And I gave them the real Richard Pryor, and it wasn't good enough. Because they wanted to hear that voice like he was on stage, but that's not who he was. He wasn't like that off the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't know how to separate that.
He was like a serious, solitary guy.
Quiet dude.
Yeah.
Shy, a little bashful, all those things.
Mm. He always seemed to hook up with very alpha females.
Oh, crazy bitches.
Comedians love crazy
bitches. Yeah,
there
was some crazy. No, they were crazy, especially this last one. I won't even call her the wife. She was just, she's crazy. She's took control of everything. Like, there's a documentary coming out about him we knew nothing about until I was doing an interview last week for my book.
Oh.
Somebody mentioned it to me. Oh, what do you think about the documentary, Richard Pryor? Well, I didn't know anything about it. Because she keeps those things from us because she doesn't want us to ruffle the feathers.
Right. Mess up a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And let me know if you want to sing at any point in time tonight. I'd be honored.
Well, whenever you want me to, I'll just blow something out while I can.
Whenever you're in the, when you're in the, when you feel, when it feels right.
Well, it's not really when it feels right. It's kind of like, just do it. My thing is like.
I don't want you to like fart on call.
I would never do that.
It's really hard to do, by the way.
No one's ever. Oh my God. I remember the times I was married in relationships. No one ever heard me fart. The people I was with.
Oh, really?
No. And I'm at home by myself, I close
Did
the bathroom
you squeeze
door.
Out like a silent
when I'm home
one?
By myself, I close the bathroom door.
Mm.
And lock it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, it's funny. I always feel safer with the bathroom door wide fucking open.
Once I lived a life as a millionaire, spending my money, I didn't care. taking all my friends out for real good times. Buying champagne, whiskey, bootleg wine. But then one day, I started to sing so low. Didn't have a friend, no place to go. But if I ever get my hands on that dollar again, I'm gonna squeeze onto it till the eagle grins. Nobody wants you when you're down and out. Well, your pockets if you don't have one penny. Well, your friends, you just don't have many. But just as soon as you put up your feet again, here they all come talking about, hey baby, I'm your long lost friend. Well, it's strange, but without a doubt, nobody wants you. I said, no, 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 nobody needs you. Nobody wants you, baby, when you're down and out. Whoa. Ooh. Yeah, I sing that to my dad in my shows and everything. So
I'm sitting right next to you. I feel that in my loins.
Yeah. It was a little tough to sing. Sorry for the little cracking in the voice.
That's sexy. That's real.
Yeah, it's real.
That's untouched. That's unfiltered.
It's unfiltered. It's not auto-tune, baby.
Yes. Thank you for...
Thank you. I don't know, just all of a sudden you said as soon as singing when I felt it.
Yeah, as soon as I said it, leaving the bathroom door always made me feel safe. You were like, woo, I'm going to sing now. That was good. Oh, I really appreciate that. So, what else would you like to talk about?
Let's talk about life. Yeah. How life is changing. My life has changed so much. I look about where I was at 2 years ago.
Very different.
You know, I was in a relationship with a guy for 7 years. And the direction of my life now, I look at how it's changed. And I think that's why one thing, like, I don't want to put myself, no longer want to put myself in a bubble.
You also look so healthy.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm feeling really good. Physically, I'm doing a lot better.
You look fit.
And does that mean fat?
Fit.
Okay. So I look fit.
Better than thick.
I feel better. And even spiritually, for my journey, because everybody's walk is totally different.
Yes.
So mine is a spiritual life and my faith with God. So it's a totally different thing with me.
Yeah, you go to church.
And I go to church now, and I do praise and worship. And my ex-wife is actually my pastor. And what's so funny is that my ex-wife is someone...
like a full circle or something.
Is a full circle, but is someone... If you knew our history as far as how I couldn't stand her. How she, you know, hurt me. And she's in the book, and she knows she's in the book. Mm-hmm. How she hurt me and the things she did and how she wasn't a good wife or anything like that. And how now you look at how we are now.
And she's your pastor.
And my pastor and how we get along. And she's a totally different person. Mm-hmm. And I'm a different person, you know. And that was the thing in my relationship. I needed a change, and it was like, even though it was a thing, like, I always cared about the person I was with. We were together 7 years. But I think a lot of times when you're with someone, it gets to a point where it's convenience. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how do I step out of that? You know, not that it was convenience because their person is financially responsible for you, but convenience of having someone there and convenience of having someone to turn to and not walking in the house alone and someone always being there. I had to get out of that and learn who I was as a person and how I could be beneficial to myself and how I could love myself. Because in order for me to love someone else, truly love someone else, I had to know who I was and love myself.
Yeah.
And to forgive myself for the things I've done.
Yeah.
And for the hurt that I've been through and all those things and the hurt that people put me through.
You don't forgive yourself. You invite punishment and punishing people into your life.
Yeah. And then forgiving the people that did things to me, not for them, but for me. Because people hurt you.
Tell me a bit about that, forgiving people that hurt you.
Well, like I was saying, for one thing, people hurt you.
How do you come to that?
Well, people hurt you for one thing. Mm-hmm. And they go along about their lives. And they don't even realize or even care in some instances. And they're going on and you're suffering back here. Woe is me. I'm going through, don't you realize how I'm hurting and everything? What I'm going through, I'm going through this and you did this to me. And they don't have an inkling. And I think what happened with me in my life, I learned and got to a point where I said, I really want to be happy. I want to know what being happy is.
Yeah.
I want to really feel
love. Increase your capacity for happiness.
And all that. Yeah. I want to feel love, and not love from somebody else. I want to feel love and know really what that's like, and genuine love, and really love myself. If nobody ever came into my home and nobody ever came to embrace me, that I was going to still be all right, and I was still going to survive, and I was still going to be me no matter what. And that's what it was. It was like a trigger, like, I need more than this. I need more than what I'm having right now. I love you. I love you, who I'm with. I love you, and I care about you. But I can't do this anymore. You know, and you need better. You need to find someone and to be with someone who's truly, truly understands who they are as a person.
Yeah, that's the secret of life.
Yes, it is. Bail!
Daylight come and we wanna go home. Yeah, we have to record a song together.
We've said that for several years now.
I think it's a good time.
At the place?
Yeah, definitely. Get Dave Sussman in on this with his guitar.
Did he move to New Orleans?
No, Oz did.
Oh, okay.
My old bass player.
The old bass player, okay.
With my burlesque daughter, swept her off her feet, Dick Jones. They're down there together now.
Dick Jones, what a name.
That's her stage name.
Wow.
She got it from RoboCop.
Wow.
I think that was the villain in RoboCop.
Wow, I don't know.
His name was Dick Jones. she has a lot of gender play in her work too. So.
Man, I think about when I wanted to try burlesque just to do so because I'm really creative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you'd be a good host and singer, and you fit into that world very nicely. Yeah. But you also have a history with drag.
Yeah.
Which I always think of as burlesque's, you know, evil stepsister.
Drag was the cool aunt
of burlesque.
Drag was something else for me. Drag, you know, even though I love doing drag and all those things, drag to me, when I look back on it now, even though the fact that, you know, you're looking back, you know, sexuality-wise and everything, that I slept with men and all those things, that wasn't the thing with me. The thing with drag was me was the theatrics and the performing.
The performance and, art side.
Yeah. And then also being someone more than what you were.
Yeah.
Because I was a quiet guy. And I'm still quiet.
And you were in the Navy at the time Navy, you discovered this?
When I first started. And so I think the thing with that quiet part of you wants to be able to get on stage and be something different. So drag gave me that. Drag gave me the opportunity to be someone else and to have those attitudes and that rawness and be nasty to people in the audience and all those things Richie couldn't do.
Ah, yeah.
Rainey McKnight could do, but Richie couldn't do.
Rainey McKnight.
Yeah, that was my stage name.
That's a nice one. How do you spell Rainey?
R-A-I-N-Y. Mm. McKnight. M-C, capital K.
Play on the word knight.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
You always think of knights as male, too.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah. I used to do this song called, Welcome to the Real World. I can't remember who did it, but I'd love to find it. But I did the song where I had a thing of Spanish moss made, this huge platform. And I had dancers
came a full production.
Came out of the moss and opened the ground up, came out of graves. And I would do the song Welcome to the Real World.
Jane Child.
Yeah. Oh my God, I would love to hear that. I haven't heard that since the early 80s.
Well, I'll tell you what, at the end of this show, we'll play it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But I used to come out of the graves and do the song. And then I did a song, one of the first numbers I did was, I did a song from Dreamgirls called And I'm Telling You I'm Not Going. Mm-hmm. And I'm in a coffin. And the guy's standing there saying, she said she would never leave me, said she would never go. And I raise up, and I am telling you I'm not going. Came out of the coffin, yeah.
This makes me think of Screaming Jay Hawkins. Do you know about him?
Sounds familiar to me.
I think he slept in a coffin, too. Check it out. I'll pull it up for you real quick. Screaming Jay Hawkins.
Yeah, I did some crazy. I did one number I did was, what's her name?
He was the creator of I Put a Spell on You.
One of the numbers I did was Wind Beneath My Wings. Remember? From Beaches.
Oh, yeah. Bette Midler, yeah.
And the lesbians hated it because my Wind Beneath My Wings was a dildo.
Oh, there's no need to.
I'd raise it up. Did you ever know that you're my hero? And I hold it up. Yeah. Wow.
Screaming Jay Hawkins.
Totally me. Yeah. I had to make my coffins because I couldn't be in a real one.
You didn't want to be, or it was just too, because they're expensive.
I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it.
No?
I just did a movie that's actually on, you can find it on demand, called Getting Grace. I did. It was about a girl, 16, who has cancer. And I'm in the opening scene, and our scene is in the funeral parlor, and there's caskets there, and he's trying to sell his caskets. Mm. And I'm the whole time, before the camera says action, I'm like, oh my God, I'm with caskets.
You're like the guy in Body Double.
Yeah, I'm like,
you've totally seen Body Double,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Brian De Palma.
Yeah.
Yeah. The opening scene, the guy's in the coffin, he's having a panic attack.
I'm not in the coffin. Mm-hmm. I'm standing next to it.
Wow. You know, it just goes back to murder.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I think so.
But when my mother died, I bathed her.
So you didn't mind touching a corpse?
No.
But that's your mother, though.
Yeah. My mother, when she actually died, took her last breath.
Yeah.
I got a washcloth, put soap on it, and bathed her body.
That's really beautiful.
And then I wrapped her up when they came and everything with the sheets. Mm-hmm. I wrapped her. My family said I got really crazy with the wrapping. It was like I forgot.
Like your mummified.
I was like, mummy. They said I was literally like doing, and they said I was doing it to where I wasn't cognizant of what I was doing. I was like totally into it because I was trying to, it was survive, you know, to survive losing her.
Yeah.
Because she would like tell me, she would like.
Well, because if you stop rapping her, then it's official.
Yeah. Yeah. And she was like, when is he going to come? You said he was coming, Richard. When's he coming? I said, he's coming for you, Mom. He's coming for you. And then she had me sing to her what I sang at her funeral.
Uh-huh.
She wanted me to sing to her what I was going to sing there because she wanted to hear it. So I sung a song, I Won't Complain.
Oh, my God.
It's a beautiful gospel song. You have to look it up. But that's one of the songs. That's what I sung. I've had some good days. I've had some hills to climb. I've had some weary days and lonely nights. But when I look around and I think things over, all of my good days, they outweigh my bad days. I won't complain. Sometimes dark clouds hang low. I can hardly see the road. I ask the question, Lord, why so much pain? You see, God's been good to me. He's been better than I ever see. And I'll say, thank you, Lord. I won't complain. Yeah. Of course, I didn't sing at all, but that's it.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. It was beautiful. So I sung it at her funeral. And I don't really even remember.
There wasn't a dry eye in the house.
People told me about that, but I don't even really remember it.
No one can sit through that at a funeral.
Yeah, I don't really remember it because it was just like, you know.
Wow.
But the fact that I sung at her funeral. And what's weird about my mother's funeral, I sung at her funeral. I planned it and did everything. And my mother's death didn't hit me until 3 months after that.
Yeah.
Until I was with my roommate Ryan in Iowa.
Surviving.
And it was like 3 months later,
yeah.
I went to him in his bedroom and said, did my mom really die?
Oh,
and I
Jesus.
Had to call my aunt, Aunt Angie, did mom really die? And she was like, yes. And I lost it. I mean, lost it.
Wow.
3 months later.
That's that Cancer moon. You have that hard protective shell.
Yeah.
But all that soft stuff inside.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers. To lesbianism.
To lesbianism. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we close out our
just to people, you know. I don't know if this has been like really melancholy for a lot of people or really slow for a lot of people, what they're used to hearing, that high energy. But because of my book is like show me a lot of different things, and my book, the reason why I really wrote it, especially,
it's been compelling and riveting,
and it's showing people that no matter what darkness you're in, what light you're in, no matter what you're going through, you don't have to end your life. You don't have to do this. You don't have to do that. There is light further. People tell you there's light further, but you don't see it. But I'm here to let you know that there's more than what you see right in front of you. If you just take a couple steps, just take one step at a time, and it's going to get better. Just keep going and keep moving forward and knowing your worth and knowing who you are.
And you'll finally see the forest for the trees.
Yes. That was my main really thing I wanted to show in my book in a prior life.
I can't wait to read it.
Yeah.
And the official release date again?
The official release date, it was April 10th. And because of demand, because of so many pre-orders, they moved it up to March the 1st.
Fantastic.
Yes.
That's in a few days.
Yes, a few days, and you can order it on Amazon with the hardcover, paperback, or the Kindle. Or you can go to...
That's the day this show airs.
Oh.
There you go.
Or you can go to BearManorMedia.com, which is the publisher, and order it. They're actually sending out copies right now. But I know there's also like iTunes or iBooks or some other things, the places where you can actually order. Or you can go on inapriorlife.com and order the book, which is my website for the book.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I'm glad that's out there.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being
Thank
here.
You for having me, Velocity.
I missed you so much.
I've missed you as well.
Great to see you again.
You as well.
Cheers.
Tinkle.
I love you.
Love you too, baby.
Danger.
that's Jane Child doing Welcome to the Real World, the song that won
Miss Gay Illinois US of A pageant in Peoria, Illinois.
Fabulous. And now we're closing with another fave of yours.
God Bless a Child by Billie Holiday.
Yes. Mwah. Mwah. Child, and every Friday at the stroke of midnight, ride the broomstick with Fallen Woman, stirring up the cauldron at Radio Free Brooklyn.